people climbs in the world sun. White people might be the biggest one. It ain't a race thing, I don't believe in that. But you gotta dig deep to get where I'm at. You got so many guns, you could start a war. I thought that's what you had Jesus for. Let's put a gun in every school. You said that. Let's put the teachers in the gun stores. I said that. Got an American tan. Got an American tan. I'm famous for nothing. I'm rolling in dough. Reality ain't nothing but a TV show, yeah. All right. Sometime I like to steal the Hollywood sign. Take all the letters and spell out some other shit. Wouldn't it be cool if you could spell something like too rich to die? But just change every letter into a dollar sign. The more truth you tell, the more expensive a word. The next force of a generation's gonna need the money to get hurt. But that easy money done gone from easy to tough. There's way too much of that shit, and somehow it's still never enough. Got an American tan. Got an American tan. I'm famous for nothing. I'm rolling in dough. Reality ain't nothing but a TV show, yeah. All right. I'll make a deal with you right now. It's a real game changer. Are you ready? Let's roll on and put on the stones. Fuck it.
Got an American tan. Got an American tan. I'm famous for nothing.
Hello, my name is Aaron Lee Tasjan. You're listening to That Much Further West podcast. This is a song called Memphis Rain. Her soaking leather jacket was heavy as the pain in the Memphis rain. In the Memphis rain, diamond drops are sparkling on the zipper and the chain. In the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain, lining, my old friend, come back around again in the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain. His CB750 was taking her away in the Memphis rain. In the Memphis rain, that motorcycle madman has led her heart astray. In the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain, please, silver lining, my old friend, come back around again. In the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain, wishes are like lightning, so don't you move too slow. In the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain, the pain comes when you touch one and have to let it go. In the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain, please, silver lining, my old friend, come back around again. In the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain, in the Memphis rain.
We're small but enthusiastic.
Aaron, welcome into the show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to Portland.
Yeah. Mm, it's great to be back in Portland, man.
Yeah.
It's a great town.
I was thinking that could have been easily a Roy Orbison song.
That was, oh, man, I love Roy Orbison.
Yeah, that's there's good. Some influence came through then. That was really cool. That sounded great. Great song.
Thank you.
And you're here currently during the Kingdom Tour for the McMenamins, right?
Yeah.
You're doing kind of a Northwest little batch up here.
We sure are.
Yeah.
And having a blast doing it.
You came full band?
Yeah. We excellent. Brought the whole band up with us. Get weird.
Yeah. This town's kind of known for that.
Yeah. Well, we figured, you know, we didn't want to embarrass ourselves in the place where, like, you know, Elliot Smith and Heat Miser and all that kind of stuff came out of. So.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of great bands from here. Fantastic. How has the tour been so far?
Really fun.
Good.
Really fun. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's cool. It's kind of it's cool because it is you know, there is definitely a sense of like you're in a cool place, you know, you're in a cool town. There's stuff going on. But see, there's stuff going on right now.
Sadie making it weird again.
But no, but it's true, and you know, and but people are also like a lot, oftentimes, like if you play in New York City or something like that, it's like there's tons of stuff to do, but you get the crowds, the people are kind of like over it all, you know, it's like they've seen everything, but like people out here, man, are still kind of wild and weird, and they like to come up and tell you about it, and they like to holler at the show and stuff, and that's what we like.
Good.
The most.
Excellent. I'm glad you're getting that vibe while you're here. Yeah, very cool.
We kind of have talked a few times here about Portland. We're kind of spoiled because we're on this, in the West, there's not a lot of places to stop, and we are one of the places to stop. We're especially on the corridor between San Francisco and Seattle. So we feel kind of sometimes like we have an embarrassment of riches, like, oh, you know, well, we could go see 7 shows tonight or something like that because there's so much going on. It's nice to hear that from an outside perspective of like people here are still like totally into it, because sometimes we feel like, oh, you know, there's you go to a show and people are just not, like you said, in New York, where they're kind of like they're over it. But it's good to hear that. I'm glad. That makes me feel a little bit more proud of Portland.
Heck yeah.
Hey, Aaron, when we last caught up with you, you were looking forward to kind of putting the wraps on what would become In the Blazes.
Yeah.
And I knew you were, you had more sessions down in California set. And here we are. I don't know. What is it? About 8, 9 months later.
Yeah.
Records on the street.
Yeah.
How's the response been to the record?
It's been really, really nice, man. It was one of those things that we didn't have to, like, try too hard to market. It just sort of, you know, for the people that got it, they just seemed to kind of get it, which was worked out really well financially because we didn't have a whole lot of money to market it anyway. So, you know, it was kind of cool to just kind of see it take on a life of its own. But, you know, I kind of figured when I made it, it would sort of be like a lot of the other records, you know, that I've worked on in the past where, you know, I'd put it out because I was proud of it and stuff. And maybe my friends would listen to it and, you know, hopefully think that it was cool or whatever. But I didn't really anticipate a lot of the, you know, response that we ended up getting from the record, you know, from both music listeners and people that write about music as well. It was been a very humbling experience releasing that record in that regard.
Got a sweet tooth for knocking out teeth, but that's just how I feel today. Tomorrow never knows who I might be. It might be best to just stay out of my way. Don't know a thing about the dirty projector. She could have told me if I hadn't left her. Guess I forgot to buy my boat shoes. Well, I've been busy kicking ass with smoking dope too. And this love is the dangerous kind. Wrecks the body and destroys the mind. Become cheaper than a six-string airline. This love is the dangerous kind. This old world is a hospital, handing out medicinal popsicles. Is anybody gonna tell the truth? Bob Dylan's early interviews were follies of youth. Everything we had just got took. Nobody's saying a damn thing. Jesus ain't as popular as Facebook. And I'm still grabbing for the brass ring. This love is the dangerous kind. Breaks the body and destroys the mind. Become cheaper than a six-string earline. This love is the dangerous kind. This love is the dangerous kind. Breaks the body and destroys the mind. Love is the dangerous kind.
Cool. Did you mention that you might have another song from the record to play for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll do one off of In the Blazes. That first one, Memphis Rain, is going to be on an album called Silver Tears that's going to come out, I think, in October. And we just signed a deal with New West Records. They're going to put it out for us.
Guys.
Thank you. Yeah, we're super happy to be over there. They've got Kim Bowie, and who, oddly enough, was the same lady that signed Driving and Crying to Island Records in 1987.
There you go. Right on.
Very cool lady. Yeah, we're super happy to be over there, man. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and everything that they've been putting out this year is I just heard the Robert Ellis record not too long ago, and it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's so good, man. He's like a country. What's his name? God dang, now I can't think. Oh, Richard Thompson, man. Oh, he's like a country Richard Thompson or something. Yeah. You know, he's like so good at the guitar.
Yeah.
It's very intimidating.
Right on. So what's this one you're going to play for us?
So I'll do this one off of In the Blazes called The Trouble with Drinking. Trouble with drinking is it ain't no trouble at all. I don't have no problem when it comes to alcohol. It's as easy to come by as the air that I breathe, unless I'm low on money or too high on the weed. I ain't one for singing all them drinking song. I'd rather leave it to old Joe Fletcher and keep on keeping on. But I sure love the drinking part, and I think it loves me. So I hold this beer in my hand forever after happily. 'Cause the trouble with drinking is it ain't no trouble at all. I don't have no problem when it comes to alcohol. It's as easy to come by as the air that I breathe, unless I'm low on money or too high on the weed. Well, some guys lose their woman and some guys lose their nerve. Well, some guys lose their temper and use those nasty words. I just lose my troubles, and hell if I don't mind. When I wake up tomorrow, they'll be too easy to find. 'Cause the trouble with drinking is it ain't no trouble at all. I don't have no problem when it comes to alcohol. It's as easy to come by as the air that I breathe, unless I'm low on money or too high on the weed. How to do it way down south. And when a New York man gets liquored, he goes shooting off his mouth. Oh, back home in the Midwest, we all drink with a band. And it's usually too much, and it's usually from a can. 'Cause the trouble with drinking is it ain't no trouble at all. I don't have no problem when it comes to alcohol.
It's as easy to come by as the air that I breathe, unless I'm low on money or too high on the weed. It's as easy to come by as the air that I breathe, unless I'm low on money or too high on the weed. I don't need no alcohol.
Awesome.
Fun song.
Right on.
I wanted to fall back to you were talking about how your last record in the Blazers, you're like, you're surprised how great it was doing, but it took off a little bit better. You know, my friends are going to hear it and some other musical acquaintances. Us doing this podcast, I feel like we're in the front row of a musical explosion right now. Right? There's so much really good things happening to good people.
Yeah.
Watching John Moreland take off. Cottle's got a new record out that's fantastic. We can look forward to your new record. Just today, I even saw Billboard's going to start a folk Americana whole segment list for them. It's the doors are opening. Rolling Stone has the whole country section, which is a little bit more of like the Stapletons and stuff. It's fun to watch. It's fun to be happening, and I feel like you're sitting right there in the pocket for this. Are you feeling the same way?
Oh, definitely, man. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, have kicked the door down for it. To be honest, I mean, it's happening now, which is an amazing thing. But you know, there, guys like me, we have to thank, you know, Elizabeth Cook, and we have to thank Todd Snyder, and we have to thank, you know, bands like Richmond Fontaine and all these kind of bands that were doing this music before it was a genre on the radio, and before it was, you know, before there was the Americana Awards and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, then again, it's like Jed Hilly is another dude he's opening a lot of doors for people like us. You know, I'm sure part of the reason that, you know, there's an Americana chart on Billboard is because, you know, Jed Hilly's done such a good job of marketing, you know, Americana, and like showing people like, look, this is a viable thing that people are into. It's not, you know, it's not just some passing trend or whatever. And I think there's always been elements of it around. You know, there's always been bands like Uncle Tupelo and stuff like that who are very much operating in the sort of the blueprint of, you know, what's become Americana. But it's kind of cool to like actually have some level of like, you know, recognition for it on a level just beyond what we all who are fans of it and who are into it and everything. No, because it's like, you know, there are people who we all know about who, like, you know, hopefully as the genre sort of expands and continues to gain wider recognition, like more people will understand, like, Buddy Miller is one of the greatest musicians like living in America, you know, and it's my hope, you know, if anything, is that, you know, it creates pathways to all that, in addition to giving new guys like us like opportunities to have a place to go with it, kind of.
such a cold little girl. How quick it all goes south. Get your boots off my table. Give me back my time. Been losing like a junkie. You're just a do-another line. Stringing up a guitar back off the greenbacks. Cleaning out the one hit. That's how I'm gonna get gone. Sitting in a high rise, feeling like a low life. Nobody knows why. All I wanna do is get gone, gone, gone. Get gone, gone, gone. Gone, gone, gone. Stringing up a guitar, back off the greenbacks, cleaning out the one hit. That's how.
Ask you a question. I was really interested in the connection between your kind of contemporaries and the kind of the older guys, like the, you know, the guys who were doing the outlaw country and the stuff in the 60s and 70s and the 50s. In particular, what I was like, you and Ray Wiley Hubbard seemed to do a lot of stuff together. Like, how did that connection kind of come about? And it seems to me there's a lot of that kind of crossing over the generation right ahead of you. And going to the, you know, there's like, they're kind of not working with those guys, but working with you guys. As you know, there's like a skipping of the George Straits and the Garth Brooks, for example,
sure.
And going to you guys and like, you know, connection between you and Ray Wiley and Guy Clark and, you know, Rest His Soul and, you know,
yeah.
And the other
Todd
people.
Todd Snyder.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's, you know, it's interesting. I guess I hadn't really thought about it that way, but that's true. I mean, there certainly is a huge magnet. I think, you know, there is a huge magnet to that older generation for guys like me, but I think part of it is just that we kind of recognize the fact that, like, we probably won't have that forever, you know? I mean, I hope that Ray Wiley Hubbard lives, you know, for as long as it's possible for a human being to live, because I really, truly believe that having that dude on this planet is, like, a better thing for the world than the other way around, because he's just that kind of person, in addition to being an amazing artist. I don't really, I guess in a lot of ways it's like, you know, every artist ends up being this sort of, you know, representation of whatever that is in their record collection, you know? And if all of the sudden, like, out of the clear blue sky, like, you're getting any sort of like recognition from some sort of dude that like you, whose music you've been listening to like since you started, it's kind of, you know, to me, that's kind of like the gold star on your homework. You know, it's like, if you have, you know, if you have some dude like Ray Wiley or something like that, who's like, you know, willing to have you on shows and stuff, that's like at least an indication that maybe you're kind of headed somewhat in the right direction, and it's sort of up to you, you know, what you do with it from there. But, you know, as far as how Ray and I, you know, met, that was through a booking agent by the name of Logan Bossomer, who she works for a company called Atomic Booking, and my manager at the time had another act that was booked by her, and you know, we were just trying to figure out like what's the right way to, you know, get things off the ground and get some people to, you know, listen to my music on whatever level that could be successful. And, you know, the idea, Ray was playing a show at Third and Lindsley, in Nashville. And somebody just said, what about, could he open for Ray Wiley? And Logan said, sure. And so she put us on the show together. And then, I didn't realize this, but I guess Ray, had sort of like snuck up to the side of the stage or whatever when I was playing and watched the last half of my set. And I walked off the stage and he said, he came over and shook my hand and he said, I told my booking agent, anything that you want to open for me for the rest of the year, you can do it. And I was awesome. Like, this never happens to me. It's usually like, yeah, you know, your car is broken forever is the news I'm used to getting. So, so that was a great change.
and then he put the little gold star next to your name.
I can't believe it. I mean, yeah. I had actually met him a few years earlier at South by Southwest, and it was right when he was putting out the Grifters Hymnal. And he gave me a copy of that record, and I knew who he was because of Redneck Mother and stuff. But I spent the next year of my life listening to that album and dissecting the guitar playing on it, and the songwriting was so good and so and it was so striking to me. Like, man, here's this dude who's like probably like in his late 60s, you know, who's been doing this forever and is making the best music of his life like right now. That I just found that to be tremendously inspiring, so getting to hang out around that dude is total home run for me.
Awesome.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your musical education, as it were. You listen to your stuff and there's a real poet's spirit that kind of comes forward. We even had you do a spoken word thing on one of your EPs. Yeah. And leaving Ohio out of high school, you took a destination but weren't long to stay there. And I was wondering if you just, as all this kind of led to kind of a seeking, because you don't seem, you might be a little bit more settled now in East Nashville than you were in New York or wherever. Is that fair to say? And
yeah. I think that is fair to say, but it's, you know, I the poem thing I got from my mom, because my mom was an English teacher for a long time, but she was also way into poems. I mean, she at one point when she was in college, the bank that she had her student bank account with or whatever, like, made a mistake and accidentally put a bunch of somebody else's money into her bank account, which I guess could happen in those days. But anyway, she went to the bank one day and like looked at her thing and was just like, oh, like, I guess like maybe my dad like put a bunch of extra money in my bank account or something. She didn't even question it. She just went right to the bookstore and just bought every poetry book that she wanted. So I thanks to that bank's mistake, I don't know what bank it is, or I'd thank them personally, but we had an amazing collection of poetry books that my mom had bought when she was in college at our house. So from the time I was like, you know, 11 or 12 years old, from the time I really remember first hearing songs and being interested in what makes up lyrics on songs, like, I was already reading like E.E. Cummings books and, you know, all kinds of stuff that my mom just had, you know, William Blake. I mean, you name it, like, she had every, you know, every awesome poetry book that you could want to read. And so that's where a lot of that stuff came from. I think, you know, when you get into that mindset of, you know, wanting to be a writer with kind of something to say, which I think was what I really wanted, because all the guys who I admired were these guys like John Prine and like Arlo Guthrie and like all these kind of guys who had great songs, you know, like, you know, Highway in the Wind or whatever. That's a great pop song. But he also like had like Alice's Restaurant and stuff like that, that had this whole, you know, like social conscience. It was important. You wanted to listen to it because it was important on like a lot of levels. You like, you know, there was more than just like, this is an interesting song or whatever, you know, it said something. And I think when you start to get into that place in your mind, it's like, it makes you kind of change into that sort of seeking mentality, because you're sort of like, you know, how do I gain experiences in my life so that I have something to say? Todd actually tells a funny story about it sometimes at his show, where he like signed up for this open mic one time in Texas when he was living in San Marcos, I think. And it was at the Cheatham Street Warehouse. You could go down there and sing a couple songs. And so he sang, he signed up to sing, and he remembered when he signed up to sing that the guy who had signed up before him was this dude named Aaron Allen. And so he was like, okay, when I hear them call Aaron Allen, I'll know, like, I'm the next guy, so I'm gonna remember that. And then Aaron Allen got up to sing, and the deal was you could sing three songs, but they had to be songs that you wrote. And so he got up to sing, and he played this song, and Todd was sort of listening to it, and he kind of started to like recognize it, and he was like, wait a minute, man, this is like a Willie Nelson song. And then, like, the guy played another song, and it was, like, some other famous country singer's song. And he went up to the person that was in charge of the open mic and was like, hey, I thought the deal was we'd just sing our own songs here, and, like, that guy just sang, like, a Willie Nelson song, and, like, what's going on, you know? And she was like, oh, yeah, like, he Willie Nelson sang it, but that dude wrote it. And Todd wasn't really expecting that to happen. And so, you know, so it kind of freaked him out a little bit. And so he went up to the dude after the show and was just like, man, how do I do what you do? And the guy was like, well, you know, he basically sort of went the long way to tell Todd, like, if you sort of, you know, live your life in this way where, like, you put yourself in situations that may be pretty undesirable to some people, but, like, you'll gain this perspective that nobody else is going to have, having been through, you know, some sort of weird thing or whatever, and, you know, that'll help make you a better, more interesting songwriter, because you'll have all of this, you know, you'll have all these different colors to pick from when you're painting your picture, as opposed to just kind of, you know, making everything up off the top of your head all the time. And I sort of heard that early on, you know, when I was starting to write and stuff, and thought, that's a great idea. Like, I'll just screw up my life, and then, like, I'll have tons of stuff to write about. And it worked out pretty good so far.
Well, you left school.
Yeah.
Kind of right away.
Yeah, yeah. I was there for about 6 months at Berkeley, and I mainly went there for a girl, if I'm being totally honest about it. She was going to Boston University, and I thought maybe I would, like, marry her one day or something. But that turned out to she had, like, a whole other plan for it that I was unaware of at the time. But, you know, it's cool, man. I learned a lot from it. So I was happy to have been in Boston for some time, because I got introduced to, like, all this great music. Like, they got this guy up there named Duke Levine, who's, like, an incredible guitar player. He's played with everybody. He's got a friend named Kevin Berry that plays with him a lot. That's really great. I mean, there's just incredible musicians up there. I would go watch those dudes play and be like, man, I wish I could do that, you know? And in Boston, it was great too, because it was a smaller scene kind of than New York and, you know, some of the other places I would eventually get to. So having to start off in a place that was maybe a little bit more manageable in that regard kind of, like, just helped me get my head on straight about where I was and what I needed to work on, which was a lot, as it turned out.
Well, we kind of know a lot about your history in New York and hooking up with a lot of the, you know, the 70s veterans and that kind of a thing. Yeah. But you've landed in East Nashville at a time that East Nashville is becoming like Portland or something, like, in terms of trendy, faraway place for us to look at and see some of the artists emerging. And it almost feels like a little bit of a backlash to mainstream what's happening on the other side of the bridge or the river. How's that work? I'm not sure.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Tell us just a little bit about the East Nashville community as it sits now, because we're watching Margot and she's blowing up. And what's it like? I mean, you got your own bar scene, what little places to play?
We definitely have those. Yeah. You know, we've got the Five Spot, and we've got this other place, the Basement East. Those are kind of the two main ones that people play over there on the east side of town. But there, I mean, there's just, you know, that's one of the things that's kind of cool about it that is a little more like a bigger city is that there's just music everywhere, really. You know, every time you turn around, there's somebody playing, and it's sometimes in, like, you know, unorthodox places. We have this other place in town called Fond Object, which is like a thrift store slash record store, and then they have this patio out back, and they throw shows there all the time, man. I played a really fun one with John McCulley from Deer Tick and a friend of his named Adam Caton Holland, who's a comedian, a stand-up comedian, actually. I guess Adam had, like, some festival gig or something and needed, like, a warm-up show. And so John was just like, oh, man, like, come over to East Nashville. We'll just throw a thing. So he threw a thing in the backyard, and they made a fire, and it was really fun. You know, just kind of weird show. But, you know, that kind of stuff happens all the time over there. And it's what's kind of super cool about it is that you can see in real time, because of people like Margot, you know, and there's tons of other ones from our neighborhood too, but she's a great example because it seems to be happening for her at this very moment. It's like the you get to watch this stuff kind of happen in real time, and you get to watch, you know, the whole of America, like, respond to this stuff that you were literally watching in a bar with, you know, 50 of your friends or whatever, like, you know, just a couple months ago, and going, man, this is amazing. And then you get to see her play on Saturday Night Live and have everybody in that audience go, man, this is amazing. It's such a cool feeling because it's like you end up feeling connected in all of these ways, you know, that you never really considered, and it's all on the back of, like, your friend making some piece of music that, like, really inspires you and, like, makes you feel good when you listen to it, and it's, like, seems to all be for, like, the right reasons, and it's that makes a big difference to us. You know, we don't take, you know, we don't take Guy Clark or John Prine or, you know, you know, Patty Griffin or Lucinda Williams. We don't take any of that lightly. We think that's, like, serious business, and that, you know, you get to that place by working really hard and trying to be a really good songwriter and trying to be really good at singing and playing your instrument and stuff. And it kind of, anytime you find anybody out there that has that same kind of thought process about it, you're just automatic. You're just like, yeah, man, like, this guy's on our team, you know, or this lady's on our team. And, like, and that's, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, that's the best part about it to me. There's never, I've never heard anybody say, you know, how come, you know, so-and-so is getting on this and I'm not, or any, there's none of that in our neighborhood. If that's your attitude, like, you're in the wrong place, man, because you won't find many friends to go along with you, you know. If your attitude is more of, like, you know, how can I do this better, and, like, that song that I just heard from my buddy, like, totally blew me away and is freaking me out right now, then you're in the right place.
Cool. We'll be right back.
your past. Don't worry, we've got booze and pills for pain. Move out to East Nashville and write a song about a train. And the major label cuts are all about trucks. Well, if this ain't country, then brother, it's not. Then it's almost as bad as what they call punk rock.
We got to get this guy to his sound check.
Yeah.
But maybe we could squeeze in one more song out of him. What do you think?
I think that would be wonderful.
Sure.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Aaron.
Cool. I'm going to try this song called Ready to Die. That's going to be off of the new album as well. Seen the Cuyahoga, the Ohio River too. I got sophistication down, it weren't that hard to do. There's something in that water that cuts you like a knife and bleeds you till you're scared to death of life. I'm ready to die for worthy cause. It's 'cause I'm tired of living bad. Well, I'm ready to die for worthy cause. It's 'cause I'm tired of getting mad. One of these days gonna lose my mind. Can't wait to see what they'll help me find. I've been sitting on the couch with the house on fire. Gonna be one hell of a funeral pyre. I don't care about tomorrow. I stay up all night, howling in the darkness. I saw the light. Hank Williams was no angel. They put him on the cross. They left him in the back of that Cadillac,
all alone and lost. Well, I'm ready to die for a worthy cause. It's 'cause I'm tired of living bad. Well, I'm ready to die for a worthy cause. It's 'cause I'm tired, tired, tired of getting mad. One of these days gonna lose my mind. Can't wait to see what they'll help me find. I've been sitting on the couch with the house on fire. Gonna be one hell of a funeral pyre.
Aaron, we can't say thank you enough for being here. It's a real treat for us, and especially playing some of the new songs. Thank you so much for sharing those with us.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it.
Awesome.
And of course, we wish you well out on the road.
Well, thank you.
Can't wait to see you to come back through again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if listeners, if you get a chance to see this band, it is unreal. you guys are, I'm just picturing you out with hardworking Americans.
Oh,
you guys would be the perfect pair. You know?
We'd
am
love
I
to
wrong?
Do that
I mean,
time,
Todd yeah. better be calling soon.
We love those dudes.
Yeah,
he listens
fans.
To the show, so I'm sure he probably he's probably dialing
maybe
right
this
now.
One. They're right. friends, you know.
I'll
Todd, if you're
email
listening.
This link to his manager.
Oh, perfect. perfect.
Oregonians calling your name, man.
And also, we want to mention Secret Artwork Hot Sauce sponsors us. We want to send you home with a bottle, get you
I
further down the road.
I had some of that with my breakfast this morning.
Perfect.
And it was as good on my potatoes as anything's ever been.
It goes, on, right. it goes on everything we've
yeah.
discovered.
Yeah.
It really does. Throw it on some ice cream. You'll be surprised.
Oh, my God.
Sometimes I'll put a little bit of hollandaise sauce on my ice cream just as a top off.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Aaron, thanks again, man. We sure appreciate it.
No,
thank you
very
much.
All right. Appreciate it.
Oh Lord, not another mistake. Shook so hard, I got them shake. Drank enough drink to kill 10 men. Go back and do it again. Faith in myself is a train to ride. Giving up my seat when the ticket gets high. Everybody runs out of reasons to cry. Living the dream or the lie. So don't walk away. Don't walk away. Don't you walk away. I'm talking to you. Don't walk away. Don't walk away. Don't you walk away, I'm talking to you.
I sit back and wait to see what becomes of a used to be. Cigarettes not dealing, go electric now. That's how radio sounds. When does a sad song go to cry? You sing it so much, the words get shy. It turns out nothing but another hard try. Just shut up and keep hope alive. So don't walk away. But don't walk away. Don't you walk away. Don't you walk away, I'm talking to you. Walk the path, but watch the corner. You could use the danger as it rides. When all that trouble's in your dreaming, there is no way to step aside. Rest in the arms of another day. I can't stay with it, but I wanna stay. Won't have heart, but I think too much. Nothing like using a crutch. Somebody knows how to shake those hands, kiss those rings, make those fans. Those kind of people I just can't stand, watching them fake entertain. So don't walk away. Don't walk away. Don't you walk away. I'm talking to you. Don't walk away. Don't walk away. Don't you walk away. I'm talking to you.
Said a thing. They can love you, takes away the pain. I sleep.
History of a beginning. Somewhere between Smokin' Joe Strummer and a man who changed his name from Gordon Sumner is what we have come to know as not punk. First, the real punk, Lenny K's Nuggets. Built from the underground, it was a collection of the largely ignored at the time, American bands grasping at the American dream as it carefully eluded them. 96 teardrops are shed on the turntable as the record goes around again, and here we are today, still listening. Someone says, "Dude, that is so not punk," as Blink-182 stumbles around all gacked up on hair dye and long shorts. Meanwhile, Iggy sits with Tom Waits and smokes another cigarette in a black and white movie. As I sit in an armchair in Peru, David Johansen explains to a reporter that his band did not invent punk. He resembles Bob Dylan at his press conferences in the 1960s. He is articulate and bewildering. Flights of high-octane guitar soar through the hotel lobby as "God Save the Queen" comes on the radio. There is Steve Jones, perhaps punk's very own John Wayne. Perhaps the pawn shop receipt for David Bowie's stolen gear should have been signed Marion Robert Morrison. And now, the shake of punk to come. And it's out there, waiting. In the meantime, I can't trade in my guitar at the pawn shop for a trust fund laptop and a Pitchfork review. But why would I want to? That shit is so not punk.
Boy, life on the road. this God love will set. Come a guardian of his thoughts, I wonder what's next. So he bound himself to the girl and said, hey mama, tell me, do you think that we could make it last? She looked away, let the silence speak for a while. Said, I hate thinking ahead, I can't stand talking about my past. And they were made in America, let their dreams. Step he takes is a miracle mile. Standing, laughing in the